All right, everybody, be sure to pick up your copy of Happiness Bastards, the new album we've all been waiting for by our favorite band, The Black Crowes. The album comes out March 15th. Go to your local record store, go online, go to the Black Crowes official website. Make sure you get yourself a copy. You don't want to miss out on this record. And to give you a little more incentive to go out and pick this thing up, just take a picture of yourself holding your newly purchased Happiness Bastards record or CD, and you'll be entered into the running to win the exclusive Record Store Day 7-inch of Wanting and Waiting. Get Happiness Bastards March 15th.
Welcome to the world's premier Black Crowes podcast. State of America. Hosted by two of the band's most dedicated fans, David Hudson and Ian Rice. And now, let's get the show on the road.
All right, everybody, welcome back to a very special episode of the State of America podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ian Rice, and with me, as always, Mr. David Hudson. David, how are you, sir?
It's like Christmas Eve, Ian. We're getting there. We're down the home stretch.
And also joining us is producer Jason. Jason, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm waiting for you to do one of these days where you go in with me as always and then just say my name and not David.
Well, that would cause a rift in the space-time continuum, my friend, and we would disappear like Marty McFly's brother.
The next time I host one, I'm going to be like, this is our producer Jason and the other guy.
And David's getting the shirts made up as we speak.
Yes.
But we are here for a very good reason in this episode, so we're going to be brief in our intro because we want to get right to the interview, right to the heart of the matter, as Don Henley says, and that is our interview with none other than Mr. Sven Pipien, who was kind enough to join us and talk about all things Black Crowes, including the new album coming out the end of this week, Happiness Bastards. And we get some good information on that. And speaking of information on that, there's some exclusive stuff that Sven shares with us that we're going to be putting on the Patreon for all our paid Patreon members. So if you're not yet a member, you're going to want to get yourself over to patreon.com/stateofamorica and sign up so you can see all the cool stuff we have with Sven and take part in all the giveaways we have. We're very, very amped up for the release of Happiness Bastards. Isn't that right, David?
We are. Got a big week this week. Obviously, Sven's a major interview for us, somebody we enjoy talking to. Midnight Eastern, March 15th, we're going to have a live online listening party via Zoom. You can only get on it if you're on Patreon.
And just to clarify, folks, that's Thursday going into Friday midnight, just so there's no confusion there. You're not showing up at the wrong midnight.
Patron Sandy Diamond, I mentioned this in the last episode. He said we should call it midnight from the inside out. So he gets copyright on that. We're all going to be on there. We're going to play it. The three of us have had the album for a couple of weeks now. And also Friday morning, a couple hours after the album comes out, we've already recorded our album review and that will drop. So when you wake up, you can listen to the album and then listen to our review of it. Also, giveaways. We got tons of them, of the album, CDs, albums. We're going to do some for patrons. We're going to do some on Twitter, some on Instagram. We're going to spread the love. It's a big week if you're a Black Crowes fan. I never thought we'd ever get to this day again, especially when we started the podcast and we've got new music. And you're going to hear this interview a lot about that music, and it sounds like there's possibly more. This is biggest couple of weeks that we've had in the podcast, and our good buddy down here, Jason Donsis, is the guy that's been making it happen for a lot of this stuff. So, Jason, thanks for all your hard work, and you got your work cut out for you this week.
Yeah, I took a few days off just to get it ready to go, but it's exciting. And the tour too, it's very exciting. When you listen to the interview, Sven drops a couple of nuggets on the tour that I think a lot of Crowes fans are going to be happy about. We'll all be there in our various stations hosting gatherings. David on opening night, Ian in New York at Radio City, and myself and others from our group will be in Chicago. So come on out and join us.
And Seth Miller and Trent Johnson are having a gig the night of the show in Boston.
Yes, that's the Brothers from Another Mother of a Feather Acoustic Black Crowes Tribute Experience. That's going to be on Saturday, April 28th, 2024, from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at Loretta's Last Call, One Lansdowne Street in Boston, right across from the Fenway MGM Music Hall, where the Black Crowes will be performing. So check that out. Seth and the boys do a real good job with that.
Seth said directly across the street, and they're going to be playing music, and they're going to be playing Black Crowes music, more acoustic stuff. And I think it's a full band this time. And I do want to say this, Cultfest 3.0 that was scheduled for March 23rd in Albany has been postponed. Gonna happen. I'm working on getting the date set back up. So if you were thinking about that, hold off on that. I'll get all the details out on that. And we're going to make that happen. It's going to be a good time. But other than that, man, we've got a lot to look forward to. And I think if you're a diehard Crowes fan, there's some news that's going to break in this interview about maybe some songs that are going to get played.
Yeah, and I do also want to send out a very big thank you to the Black Crowes management and their publicity team for working with us, getting us in advance of the album, and of course, setting up this interview with our friend Sven. We truly appreciate it. All right, so without further ado, let's turn this thing over to our interview with Sven Pipien. All right, everybody, we are pleased to welcome back to the podcast an old friend of ours. It's been a minute since he's been on with us, but we are very excited to have him here today, especially with the impending release of the Happiness Bastards album. Will you please welcome back to the show Mr. Sven Pipien. Sven, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to see you all again. Yeah, it's been a minute.
And nothing's changed since the last time you were on.
Nothing at all, exactly. Yeah, that was right before I joined back. The last time I talked to you guys, I was actually not in the Black Crowes.
I think the overwhelming sentiment from everybody that we've talked to, when people start talking about this reunion, one of the things they go to is, I'm so happy Sven's back in the band. People are just going crazy, man. Sven's back in the band, and you still keep seeing comments all the time, like, Sven looks like he's having so much fun, and we're just glad he's there.
Do my best with that. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird situation since I'm not, you know, an original member, even though I was there from the very beginning, you know, socially and how we all started. From the very beginning, I was there.
Now, let's bring it back a little bit. How was the Shake Your Moneymaker tour for you?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Just so much better than I expected. In all my years with the Crowes, you know, we would play songs off of the record, but never the whole thing. And certainly, you know, some of the selections were much further in the backseat than others. And it was great to play all the songs back to back on a nightly basis. You know, sure, that seems a little tedious after a while, but I actually enjoyed it all the way through, partially because, you know, the audience reaction was so fantastic. And just you see the love of the music that people have and what it means to them still after all these years. That on top of the music we're playing is just, you know, plenty of motivation to have a good time. So I smile a lot when I play these days.
Well, I remember that first show in Nashville. There was something special about when Shake Your Moneymaker came on and the lights go out and then Rich comes on. And even in the video or in the audio from a phone, you can tell he was dialed up till 11, you know, on twice as hard. What was that like? Because I didn't think we'd ever see this again. And you're up there on opening night of this tour. Was it just kind of surreal to look over and see your two buddies over there and y'all are making music again?
Absolutely surreal. But, you know, this whole business of rock and roll has been surreal when I think about it from the beginning. I can't believe some of the things I've done and I've been privileged to be a part of. So, yeah. Seeing, you know, being part of that again was absolutely surreal, but I feel pretty good under surreal situations, always have. So it felt natural to me.
It seems to me, and this is not to take away from anybody else that participated, but when Nico came on board, the level of positivity just increased tenfold. And it's so nice to look over and see the two of you sharing that side of the stage.
I mean, stage right rules, you know. I mean, but yeah, with Nico on board, he's just been a friend for years. He was in Magpie Salute with us as well. He actually introduced me to my wife, who's also from Argentina. So, and he was the best man at my wedding, believe it or not. It was great. When things turned out, you know, Isaiah Mitchell, great player, lovely guy. Just he wanted to move on, and it was kind of a perfect opportunity for us to just get someone a little closer to our family, so to speak, you know, and somebody who really, really loves the music and always has and plays it with honor and respect. And that's kind of what we needed. And he's a great player and just a fantastic guy. And I love having him to my right, you know, and I'm used to lots of volume coming to the right, and he's no different. He's got plenty of volume going on. But as we all know, that none of that matches what's going on stage left.
I don't know what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah.
I came and saw you guys, as well as a lot of other of our listeners, at that Moon Crush Festival in Florida. Right. Now, we went for all four nights. Some amazing people there. Isbell, Marcus King, J.J. Gray, great players. The sound the first three nights was horrible. The wind was just howling. You know, we had pods, and so you're next to the same people. Well, it's like Saturday night, Jason Isbell's playing, and the lady looks over at me, and she goes, "I'm really concerned that tomorrow night when the Black Crowes play, we're not going to be able to hear them." And I turned around, and I said, Rich Robinson will cut through a Category 5 hurricane. So don't you worry about that. But going back to Nico, his enthusiasm about that music, this was before he was in the Crowes, you know, this was back when it had been announced that y'all were getting back together. His enthusiasm for it and his reverence and respect for it, but then puts his own little spin on it. He has, you know, a little more feel in areas, whereas as other players would have.
I think that's the right approach, is to take, you know, to put yourself in the music, but put the music first. There's plenty of time. You know, what Nico does fantastically is play the parts so that the song is recognizable. And when there's parts where you can put yourself into it, that's when you do it. You don't start it with an intro of a song and come up with a new intro. You know, I appreciate what he does in those terms. And you're right. He's his own player. So even if he's playing Mark Ford's or whoever else's part, he's playing them as Nico Beresiartua, and it comes across that way. But it still sounds like the Black Crowes, and that's what that balance you have to strike. I did the same thing when I joined the band, having to play Johnny Colt's bass lines. I try to stay as true to that as I can on the songs that I didn't originally play on, because that's how the song becomes recognizable to people, you know. So that's always been my approach as well. So
I got to think, for like Rich especially right now, somebody that has that much familiarity with the catalog and the ability to improvise and go on the spot, that's got to be a bit of a source of comfort for him, because it's not unheard of for you guys on a tour to play 120, 130 different songs.
Yes.
And that's got to be good for Rich to just be like, we're just going to throw out this song. Nico can wing it.
He can. And sometimes Rich will actually ask Nico about tunings or certain parts, because Nico does have that catalog in his brain, basically. It's just in there. That helps us out too. And a happy Rich makes for a happy band, that's for sure. If he's comfortable, and it's always been a thing, it's never just Rich being comfortable on his own. It has to fit, you know, with the rhythm section, with the other guitar. He has to be obviously get along well enough with Chris to make the whole thing happen to begin with. And that's been fantastic in the last few years. It's just the emotional maturity that I've seen everyone go through, just because we're older, I guess. It's about time. We got a little emotionally mature, but it's made everything a lot easier.
It definitely seems like Rich and Nico, at least in concert, are playing off one another and having some fun.
It is, and it's genuine, you know. As we've all known Rich for quite some time, he's not much of an actor. you can just see it on his face, you know. Maybe you misread what's on his face, but he's not acting. And if he's got joy going on, it's real joy, you know. So that translates to everyone else in the band. That makes everyone else lighter and happier and more focused on the music and what it means to people and all that kind of stuff. So it's just it's a good development for sure.
So Sven, the word on the street is for this upcoming tour, the set lists are going to get a little more Varied. Is there any truth to that? You got a lot of songs at the ready?
Yes. I mean, we're going to go deeper, you know, things that I haven't even played that much or at all. I'm going to keep some of those surprises in my bag over here, but there's going to be some good stuff happening. You know, we've got this the tour coming up in April and May, major U.S. markets, and then over to Europe as well. And obviously, we're going to do songs from the new record, but we're also going to stick with the old standbys and then just go deep on B-sides and unreleased things and that sort of thing, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, you're speaking our language, Sven. You know that.
Hey, let's speaking of the tour, things got kind of jackknifed, I guess you could say, with the injury to Steven Tyler, and you guys got a handful of shows with Aerosmith under your belt before.
Three. That's not quite a handful.
Yeah,
it's a small handful.
I guess depends on what hand. I'm assuming you grew up a big Aerosmith fan. There's some history there between, you know, the Crows and Aerosmith, but that had to be another one of these surreal moments like you talk about. Here you are as special guest on the final Aerosmith tour.
It was absolutely surreal. And coincidentally, my first big tour with the Crows, besides the Show Enough, you know, club tour that we did, but we went to Europe with Aerosmith. So that was my first, like, big arena experience with the Crows was with Aerosmith. So I remember talking to Steven Tyler back then. He was so nice. After soundcheck, I walked over and he's talking to my parents. And I was like, this is amazing. So as I walked over, they're having this great conversation. They almost didn't want to talk to me. I was like, all right, you guys go ahead. You know, so it was strange coming back into it and just seeing all the fanfare behind Aerosmith's last tour. I mean, that's just a big deal for anyone who was around back in the day. And even if you weren't, you know, that's as far as American rock bands. You can't put many above them. You know, they're up there. They're on that top shelf. And in a purest American way, I would put them at the very top, you know, in some ways.
As the saying goes, they're not in a class of their own, but it doesn't take long to call roll.
Very well put.
You know, so let me ask you this. If that thing ever does get off the ground again, are you guys tied to it?
Well, I wouldn't say tied to it, but we're and I can't say we're planning on it or banking on it. We're hoping for it, you know, and that would be the situation if all goes well in their camp. And we're hoping and praying every day that happens for them as much as for us. You know, it would be a wonderful thing to see them pull this off and actually give a proper peace out, you know, because they deserve it.
I will tell you this. Those guys didn't do you any favors with the stage design.
They did not. That's all right.
Did you guys know that ahead of time, or did you just show up and we have the stage the way it is?
We knew it was going to be limited, but actually it didn't really hit home until we were there on stage and realizing, okay, I've got three steps to my left, none back, 1 foot forward, and that's about it, you know. And Nico had it even worse because he was going to fall off the side of the stage if he was anywhere. So, but those things matter so little in terms of what we were doing. There's this huge crowd of rock and roll fans, and they were, you know, I can't say all of them, but a giant percentage of them were really, really into what we were doing and were really responsive and receptive. And all the guys in Aerosmith have always been so supportive on what we do. And there's just, we're like younger brothers or something, you know, and not that we're carrying the same torch, but we could, you know, it's along the same lines as far as being a true American rock band. We're just a generation past them. That's all.
And nobody's cooler on the stage than Joe Perry.
Always. He's the coolest. I mean, I remember being, you know, 14, 15 and thinking, that's a cool guy right there. You know, that's what you want to be like. Of course, as a guitar player, you have a different thing going on than as a bass player. I figured that out once I started playing bass in bands. Like, oh, okay, nobody's really looking over here. I don't really know what's going on. I mean, you know, that's your first impression. I started playing keyboards and guitars in my first band and stuff, and I didn't play bass until a little bit later on. So it was kind of a realization of what a different position that is, but that's what made me fall in love with it. I don't dig the spotlight. I don't dig to be the center of attention, but I love to be part of things, you know, and I can't be part of it any more than playing bass. You take the bass out of a song, there's nothing left, you know, there's no body left, so to speak. So I've always felt a home there playing bass for sure.
It's the foundation, drums and bass, man.
It's the foundation, and you know, and with the Crows, it's always been a tripod. You know, it's Rich's rhythm guitar, the drums, and bass kind of make the rhythm section. It's and it's odd because it starts with Rich. He's always done the rhythm guitar, and that's where everything comes from. And having someone to triangulate that is what makes the Black Crowes work. It's always been an interesting thing and just exciting thing to be a part of.
Yeah. I would imagine that another exciting thing to be a part of was the recording of the Happiness Bastards record. Tell us a little bit about that, the songwriting process and how it went in the studio. It must have been exciting to be in the studio. It's, the first time you're in a proper studio since War Paint. I mean, Before the Frost was, in Levon's place and everything. So what was the whole process like for you?
Well, fantastic. It was great. And also interesting, interesting in how different it was to some of the past sessions, but also how similar. The brothers have always worked the same way. Rich has a ton of songs. I think for this record, he had somewhere around 40, 45 songs. I'm not going to say they're 100% complete, but they're songs. Maybe a lot of them, obviously, without lyrics, because that's what Chris does. And Chris does his magic by they'll switch a pre-chorus for a chorus, or the middle eight becomes the verse, things like that end up switching around, however Chris approaches it. But that's just always been magical for me to watch and be a part of. Plus, it was just a fantastic studio, Neon Cross Studios in Nashville, Jay Joyce's preferred studio. I guess it's his studio. It was interesting having all those songs, and Rich had let me listen to some of his home studio recordings of them, and to see that transform into the record that it actually ended up is just a fantastic thing to witness and be a part of, and to see what Jay Joyce did to those things too, and the whole process was first of all the studios, it's an old converted church, and it has just a fantastic vibe, just made for creativity. It was built for worship, I suppose, but creativity in a music sense, it resonated in all the rafters, and it was just fantastic, just a really lovely place to work.
When did you guys record it?
It was in April and May of last year. But we had started the process of doing this record while we got word about the Aerosmith tour. So as this was happening, we were thinking, okay, well, we can do the record now and be done with it. We just won't release it now. That was kind of the plan. We'll go on tour first with Aerosmith and release it, the following year. And then when the tour backed out, we had to kind of change gears and make the record come out sooner, which means we had to finish a lot of things that we weren't finished with at the time. It's kind of like a 2 or 3 step process in the recording. We didn't necessarily do all the basic tracks first, but we tracked song by song, and they were not 100% complete, but they were well on their way. And then we kind of cut the session because we had to prepare for the Aerosmith tour. And then when we decided to release the record later, Rich and Chris went in and kind of filled in a lot of extra things that we hadn't really finished out.
Well, we were lucky enough to be sent the album a week and a half or so ago from your management. And one of the things that sticks out on this are the backing vocals that you provide. Talk to us about that. Because like Bedside Manners, man, I told you the other day that they're putting you through your paces on that one.
It's very high register. And I got to be honest about that situation. I don't know how else to phrase it. I did a lot of the backups, but some of them I didn't do because they were done after, like I was saying, we had these several sessions. And Chris and I and Rich did a lot of the multi-voice backups that were on there. Of course, we have female backup singers. I didn't do any of those, obviously. But a friend of ours, Robert Kearns, came in and did some of that really high stuff. In fact, that Bedside Manners one, which is I have to reproduce now live, but I wasn't there for it, and so it was easier because Robert lives in Nashville. Instead of flying me back to Nashville and doing these, they just they asked me what I thought, and I've always been a fan of Robert Kearns. So he knocked it out of the park. There's several of those high ones that are actually him, not me. I know that's usually been my thing in the past, but and some of them I remember Chris asking me in the studio, don't recall whether it was Bedside Manners. I think it was, but he asked me, can you hit this high note? And I remember trying. I just without the band playing or anything, just in the room there, it was. Without using falsetto, I just couldn't do it without sounding ridiculous. So that was part of the thing too. They were thinking, let's get Robert in here and sing those high notes, and Sven will figure it out later. Exactly. castrated stuff and it'll go.
I'm always fascinated by the creative process because I don't have a creative cell in my body. So when you guys go into the studio, especially like this, like we said, Before the Frost was a whole different animal, the way y'all wrote and recorded that. Completely unique. It was very cool. I think everybody enjoyed that process from like watching on the outside with the video and stuff. But let's say this, where you have more time, you can take your time and things are more plotted out. Does Rich come to you and go, here, I have this riff. How does your bass fit into it? At what point are you like, here's what I think we should play on it, or here's how we play it, or where in the process does that play out?
Well, like I was saying, there was a ton of songs that Rich had. Some of them were more complete than others, and some of them in his home studio, Rich would play kind of a simple drum beat underneath to kind of give an idea of what it's supposed to be. Sometimes I'll have a little bass line underneath or just to hold it down. But when we get to the studio, we usually just play on these songs. The way we sometimes in the studio in the past, we would do basic tracks on all the songs, but here we're just doing basically song after song. Like we would come in one day and just work on one song pretty much all day, you know, take a lunch break, come back and the next day start with another song. And that's kind of the way this record was put together. It's kind of song by song, day by day. And, you know, the first part of the morning is just, we would just start playing on it. What's there already, and you know, I would start with some very simple bass lines and just kind of hold the root down, and then as we play on it, we had the luxury of being in the studio and able to do that, you know, as opposed to some rehearsal space somewhere else. So we were able to record all the progress, and sometimes the progress was ended up being more interesting than the final result. So we would take some of those takes, and so it was just an interesting creative thing on a daily basis. To come into work and just hash it out. And by the end of the day, have a song that's maybe not 100% complete, but damn good already, you know?
Now, one thing I did want to ask about the new record in general, it seems like whether it's intentional or not, there's elements from every era of the band's past that kind of finds their way into these songs. Do you find that to be true?
I do find that to be true. And it's not like that's what we set out to do, but that's definitely what it ended up being. And it makes sense. That's the honest record to make right now. It's like Chris said, this album is a love letter to rock and roll. And that's really what it is. And all of our influences, along with all the music that's been done in the past, you know, that the band has put out, it's just part of who we are. And to make a record with that in mind, it's just going to come across that way. You're right, it's a bit from all the records. I don't think there's one that's not represented there. It's all in there on this new record, if you listen for it.
Well, with regard to the new record, now that everything's all mixed, mastered, and ready to go, what are some of the highlights of Happiness Bastards for you?
Man, I'm just impressed about, you know, just about every song is just better than I anticipated. Jay Joyce has a lot to do with that, the way the band ended up coming together in those last moments, you know, before we hit record in the studio were just great. Just this morning, I was listening to some songs, just kind of refreshing myself because I haven't really listened to the whole record like from, you know, from beginning to end. I have a couple of times, but it's been a few weeks, and so it was good to be able to do that. Came to Rats and Clowns, second song, which I've omitted, you know, just listening to, just because it's like in my mind's okay, and just simple song. It's like the easiest of all the songs bass wise, but I just love it. Just something about it. And I love playing it. It's just such an easy thing. I could just have fun with the rock and roll of it, you know. Dirty Cold Sun, it turned out to be such a cool song. The riff was, the chorus riff was the first thing I heard. And I thought that's, you know, was great. But the way it all came together with the intro riff, the verse riff, and then the chorus, it's a great song. I love that one. Wilted Rose, which we did with Lainey Wilson, beautiful thing, you know. I could literally go down the list and say something good about all of them. And that's hard for me on a record. I was not expecting that.
Her being on the album, how did that come to be? Because there's going to be a lot of people listening to this that don't listen to country music. She's the hottest thing there is in country music right now. I mean, she's on fire.
Well, some of that has to do with the fact, well, we were in Nashville. Jay Joyce has a foot in that world as well. And we were talking about who we could have come in and work, you know, have fun with us and collaborate with us. And, we, you know, Jay Joyce provided the backup singers for that as well. But then the idea came to work with her. And I don't know the origin of the very first idea. But as soon as I heard that was going to be the case, I knew it was going to be good. And then hearing it, it's such a beautiful, simple little song. I think she did fantastic.
Be nice if she shows up opening night in Nashville.
The Grand Ole Opry, right? I mean, it would be apropos, I suppose.
Now, listening to some of these songs, there's some potential for some serious jams.
There are. I think we will be extending things more than we have been on this Shake Your Moneymaker run. But we're also not going to take it to some of the places that we've been before where, like, people just lose the plot, and just don't know what's happening anymore because the jam for Wiser Time has gone into something else entirely. We don't know where we are. You know what I mean? whatever those things were in the past. But we will be going deeper on things with these. There's definitely some spots that just open wide up on these songs that we could fill with all kinds of beautiful psychedelia.
I could see Bleed It Dry getting extended out a little bit. And I love hearing Chris play the harmonica. It always makes me happy when you get a song and you see him grab the harmonica and break it out. He plays it with a lot of feel.
He does, and people respond immediately. And you could almost say he's as good of a harp player as his singer. He's almost flawless on it. I mean, everything he hits, even though it might not be the technically right note to hit, he hits it with such feel. It comes across just the way his voice does. He doesn't have maybe the most silky voice that ever was, but he projects his emotions through his voice just like he does with the harp. It's very powerful. And it affects me standing next to him. He's not playing the harp to me, but I feel it, so it excites everybody.
I have said from day one, Chris has a funk album in him somewhere.
Oh yeah. I think he's got like 10 of them. If you let loose,
I'm sure he's got a soul album, a reggae album. That was one of the things when we had Susan Tedeschi on here, she was just talking about like late nights hanging out with Chris and like how he could just go from Led Zeppelin to Sly Stone to, Otis Redding and he just slides and he can sing all of it.
Yeah, he can. He can sing all of it. He knows all of it. He's such a student of rock and roll. I mean, we all are, but I would elevate him to professor, not just student. I mean, he knows his stuff. He really does. I've been around long enough. I know my stuff too, but not like him. He's incredible that way and able to reproduce it, vocally at least. That's one of the things too. He's really good at accents and that's the other thing. I mean, if Chris didn't have music, I really think he had a career in some sort of entertainment, whether it's comedy or something along those lines. He's a special guy.
Well, one of the things I think that hasn't been brought up enough about this reunion is Chris's voice. He sounds amazing. And I have to think that obviously the music in CRB, he's not having to compete with Rich's guitar, and it was a lot more mellow and subdued. I've got to think that helped preserve his voice some, because he's been in the game a long time, and his voice sounds so good. My wife and I were watching the CMT thing you guys did with Darius Rucker, where you did She Talks to Angels, and it got through, and she's not a music fan. She goes, I never have quite understood what you see and hearing Chris's voice to like it so much. And she goes, until I saw him, she talks to Angels with Darius Rucker. Darius obviously has a great voice, and Chris really shined on that. But you got to be thinking at times, like, is this 92? See, sure sounds like 92 at times.
Yes. But on top of that, there's more focus than there ever has been. I mean, I wasn't there in 92, but I was in 97 and everything from then on. And I just think he's even better now than back then. Not in terms of necessarily just the quality of his voice, but just his delivery on a daily basis, show after show after show. These last 3 years, he hasn't had a single bad show. And that was never the case in the past. We'd have great shows, but then, we were also emotionally volatile sometimes. We just couldn't keep, the same performance on a daily basis, which is part of the charm, I guess, in some ways too. But he's so focused and has been these last few years, and his performances, his engagement with the audience, it's just better than it ever has been.
He's back to being the front man.
He is. And he's not as visibly upset about things anymore. Everyone gets upset, and I'm sure he still does, but he's at least on stage able to turn that around and make it a positive thing and give the people what they want. That makes everyone makes everyone's job easier.
Sven, not to bring the mood down any, but I did want to ask you, obviously, the Black Crowes and Black Bear Smoke are intertwined. There's long history there. And Britt Turner was a very big supporter of this podcast from the get-go, and we had him on. I never got the chance to meet him. We interacted with him, obviously, on the podcast, and we've had Charlie on a few times. And Britt would, like, send me a message or whatever on Instagram and like our stuff. And the outpouring of support for him, it's been pretty cool to see. I knew you knew him well. I was just going to give you a chance maybe to just comment on the person that he was.
Such an amazing person. I was never like super close friends with him, but I've known him in Atlanta since we were kids, or young adults anyway. But he was part of the scene with the Black Crowes when I first joined in '97. We started rehearsing at his old business, 3-1 Graphics. So we, my first rehearsals with the Black Crowes, Britt was right there, and he was always cool to me, and such a warm soul, such a full of energy, and pragmatic yet funny. And it breaks my heart, because so many of us have been so close to not just him, but his family and his friends, the band. It's been a really rough few days for all of us around here. My wife is very good friends with Charlie Starr's wife. So they hang out all the time. So yesterday we ended up watching their son, because they had to go over to Shannon's, Britt's wife's house, and just deal with a lot of things. I'm sorry I'm breaking up a little bit, because it hits me when I think about it, it's so sad. Everyone seems strong, and there's so much love and outpouring, and one of the unfortunate things about life is that death is just part of it. I lost my sister a couple of years ago in COVID, which the anniversary of was March 1st, so that's been a tough week for me in terms of existential thoughts, and the double whammy coming home from having dealt with my sister's death, and then hearing about Britt. It's been pretty heavy, but you got to move on. You got to look for the positive in life, and I think Britt would be the first one to encourage us to do that, like to not sit around and cry and wonder, but just to grab life and enjoy it, because that's what he would have done.
Well, he was certainly very cool to us, as all the guys in that band have been. All right, as we kind of close this out here toward the end, we like to do 5 rapid fire questions, and we'll ask you a question. Just first thing that pops in your mind, give us the answer. All right. When you're on tour, what's your favorite city for food?
First thing that pops, New York. New York, Paris, New York, Paris, Tokyo, for completely different reasons. I'll say just those three, just because New York has everything. Paris is Paris. And Tokyo, if you want some fine food that you've never even dreamt of, it'll cost you, but it'll be delicious in Tokyo.
Sure. What's one song, one deep track from the catalog you're hoping to break out on tour this go around?
And why is it Exit?
I love Exit, and I really hope that we play that one. I was going to say Exit. I love Peace Anyway, which is such a great song that we just don't play enough. It's a simple song. Maybe that's why, but Wyoming and Me, I've always loved that one. Those are just some of my favorites to play. There's other deep songs that I love, but that are also just like a heavy thing, like Title Song, for example. Every time we play that, I feel like it's an emotional catharsis I have to go through just to get through the song, And it's a special moment every time we do play. We haven't, I think it's been at least, 14 years now since that's been played. Or maybe 10 years. I'm not sure if we played in 2013, but I think it was 2010 last time we played it. But who knows? Maybe it'll make an appearance.
If you could be in any other band not named the Black Crowes, past or present, who would it be?
In any other band? Oh, my goodness. That's an impossible question to answer, because I can't replace one of my favorite bass players, whichever one it is, because most of my favorite bands have great bass players that I love. So I would not like to replace any of them. That's my answer to that. Whether it's the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, the Stones, the Who, I actually wouldn't want to be part of them, because I would destroy it.
Here's one that you might have to think about for a second, but if you could add one Marry My Hope song to the Black Crowes repertoire, which one do you think it would be?
Interesting. Well, Suicide King is one that I wrote that I would like to see, especially the cacophony at the end. I would like to see the Black Crowes take on that and see where that whirlwind goes at the end. That's just one that comes to the top of my head. Plus, I wrote it, so. And I think Wild Man, Child Man is something that might work. It's the one song that I know that Chris always raves about. You know, he just saw the video last week. Well, it was 2 weeks ago. We just did the video for Wanting and Waiting. He had just remarked on it, like, why don't you do a pose like you did in for Wild Man, Child Man? Because we did a video back then, and you know, I had super long hair and leather jacket, and my feet couldn't be any wider apart in my stance. You know, it's like, well, maybe I'll split the difference.
So you guys had Lainey Wilson on this, and like I said, she's the hot thing at the moment in country music. If you could record a song with the Crowes, but obviously you're playing bass and you're singing backup with any other female vocalist.
These aren't, you know, fair questions, because that's like, you know, how do you choose in that department? I mean, Lainey did great on that. I mean, Chrissy Hines, I don't know. I would love her. She could do some really cool stuff, I think. I'd love to be in a band with her. You know, Patti Smith, for sure, you know.
I would love to hear Chris and Susan Tedeschi do something along the lines of Wilted Rose. I think that's a home run.
I agree. I agree. Maybe that's something that can still work out in the future at some point. You know, we did a tour with them, and I love that band so much, and I love her. She's a powerhouse. She's a phenomenon. She was a special person to be around, that's for sure. I would love to see that happen at some point. I don't know about the reality of that, but it would be something fantastic to hear and see.
Well, Sven, it's always good to talk to you.
Always.
You're one of our more popular guests, and a lot of people always circle back to that episode that you had with us, which was great. It seems like a lifetime ago.
It was a lifetime ago. And I wanted to say, I didn't get a chance to mention it earlier, but that interview, that podcast, was the cathartic thing that enabled me to even be able to rejoin the Black Crowes, because I was able to let it all out. And I just remember, like, the day after, I felt so light and so free to have pushed out a lot of the negativity that I was holding on to. But being able to be positive with you guys about that experience enabled me to receive, you know, the call positively when I did. I was like, you know what? Yes, I'll do it. And I thank you guys for getting me to that point.
That's fantastic to hear, because we feel so much joy that you're performing with them and everything's going well. And we couldn't be happier for you, Sven.
I feel the same. Thank you, guys.
We always let our guest pick the playout song. You did a T-Rex song last time.
How's about? I saw the Jeff Beckola truth here. How about Shapes of Things? How about that?
Sounds good to me.
All right.
All right, Jason, we're going to throw it to you to close it.
Stay tall, everyone.
see the joys of